Hi, hello again, everybody, and a hearty Omaha to you wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 4 of Racing Refresh Happy Hour, this one entitled Auto Club Adios. I'm your host, Logan Loganity Morris, but I don't do it alone. Let's bring him on in. I think he's the best co-host in the business. Of course, I'm talking about the best man, our senior open wheel rider, my main man, Colin Best. Colin, how in the hell are you, sir?
Well, a hearty Omaha to you as well, Mr. Loganity. I'm certainly excited to be here this week. We've talked about is NASCAR, but as you see below, I'm the senior open wheel rider, and we have open wheel news to talk about as IndyCar and F1 get underway this weekend. So I'm very excited to get the ball rolling with both of those seasons in 2023.
Yes, I can only imagine what your pucker factor might be sitting at as we get
Zulu,
ready.
Baby. Pucker factor Zulu.
As we get ready for a full-fledged weekend of motorsports. But let's bring in the rest of this cast and crew. I'm going to talk to our show creator, our main man. There is no stupid questions with this man. Trust me, he's a man with great patience, which is why he's laughing that I said pucker factor. How are you, Adam Caravine?
I'm doing well, thanks, Logan, and a nice hearty Omaha to you as well. Am I doing that right?
Yes,
that's like a United States thing.
It's weird. In the original incarnation of the show, way, way back, I started saying Omaha is tribute to Peyton Manning, and so I just kind of stuck here, and so that's how we do that.
I like it. Well, Omaha to you, Logan and Colin, and yeah, excited to get started. I'm excited to be back after a week off as well.
Yes, you were in Canada, did a lovely video from how we watched the Daytona 500 up there. The Great American Race invades Canada. Good old US of A, baby. Speaking of the good old USA, she is tried and true, and she is patriotically blue. I'm talking about the woman that's probably shaking her head at some of the things I've said at this show already, our producer, Peggy Lore. How are you?
I'm sad.
Why are you sad?
Auto Cup cat.
Yeah, Ryan Blaney did mow him down. You know, I picture him like the granny in Twisted Metal 2, if you guys ever play that old game, where like she's on the wheel and just mowing. You guys ever played Twisted Metal? Any of you?
It's classic, yeah.
Well, Colin, I have a homework assignment for you this weekend. Okay. Go look at the Twisted Metal like 2 and 3 intro, and she's just up on the wheel. It's just fantastic. Anywho, who'd have thought I made a Twisted Metal reference on this show?
Metal 2 is the best of all the Twisted Metals.
Is that the one with the Rob Zombie intro and that whole deal there? Was that 3? I can't remember.
I don't remember. I just remember playing hours and hours of that as a young
guy. I did a song called Meet the Creeper, and it was pretty big league.
Anything Rob Zombie, I'm in.
Well, you can look up that video as you're producing from the back. Check out some of those intros, and you'll notice that granny, and she was elbows up, bro. All right, well, we got to talk some racing, but we look forward to bringing you our video game podcast, Racing Refresh. We don't know what the hell we're talking about. Anywho, let's talk Racing Refresh Happy Hour. Peggy, we will see you a little bit later. Adam, we'll see you even a little bit later. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to have ourselves a little race review. Hit that graphic for me. Oh,
beautiful.
See how that played out. All right. So let's go ahead and talk about it. It's a little jumbled order, Mr. Best, because John Nemechek won the Xfinity race, as it turned out it would be the last race on the 2 mile configuration of Auto Club because of the big rain delay. They were about 36 hours behind schedule, as Adam Alexander put it. I guess he had a flight to catch, I'm assuming. So John Hunter Nemechek gets the dub. Here's the fun fact. In 1997, when the track first opened up, Front Row Joe was on the pole. So he opens it up, and John Hunter Nemechek brings it home. What are your thoughts?
It's a perfect bookend to the Nemechek career that they both have history at this racetrack. And two real things from the Xfinity Series race that I saw. One, Sheldon Creed is a wheelman. That was one of the best saves I've ever seen in quite a while. And then John Hunter Nemechek, you know, he came on late, if I remember. I didn't catch too much of the Xfinity Series race. I only caught highlights, but he did come on very late and then took the win away from Sam Mayer, who had also a good run on Sunday night. But both races, especially the Xfinity Series race, showed that we are going to miss Auto Club Speedway and its current configuration. Hopefully the short track, if we do get that in the future, does provide spectacular racing like we saw at Auto Club, albeit a different form factor. But as I was watching the Cup race on Sunday, I just thought to myself, even though we want more short tracks, there's nothing that could beat the five wide at sometimes racing we see at Auto Club Speedway.
No question about it. I thought this was one of the better Auto Club races. I'm talking about in totality of the whole weekend in quite a while. It's always decent, but I thought it was weird. It was like Auto Club, the ghost of Auto Club past, were trying to show NASCAR, keep us as we are, keep us mm-hmm. as we are. Because I thought it brought everything that we've come to really enjoy about Auto Club. Obviously the track is worn out. That's become pretty apparent. Do want to give some credit as we continue our race review to the NASCAR track and safety teams. They worked so incredibly hard to get that track in racing condition after the monsoon that was, you know, the rare storms that were coming in Southern California. And given the fact that track is everyone's very open about the fact it's pretty worn out. I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty beat. They got that thing in fantastic condition. I didn't see any weepers, on TV. For those that don't know, a weeper, you know, is the water that builds up and then comes through the track. And so I didn't see any of that. And so I just want to give hats off to NASCAR and company for making this track, especially given, you know, this is not a brand new surface by any stretch. They made some chicken salad here out of some shiitake folks. They really worked hard to get that track in racing condition. Adam Carabine pipes in and says in my ear, Auto Club has a 90% approval rating on Jeff Gluck's Good Race poll. If you follow Jeff Gluck of The Athletic on Twitter, you know that he does a was such and such a good race poll on Twitter the next day. So 90%, that's pretty darn high.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens with Auto Club. I hope that we do get the short track configuration just because that keeps some of that history alive, keeps that market alive that fans already know. And, you know, I know that the sellout didn't show itself on Sunday, but, you know, that's probably because of the weather. And so, but it was a sellout as far as tickets sold goes. So it says that market is still alive and well. I hope that we do see that get the short track. I would rather them leave it alone, but that's just not happening. It's become apparent that that's not happening. So I'd rather have the short track than nothing because that market is so important. All right, let's move it along and talk about the big boy race, as we call it. Kyle Busch won the Cup race in just his second, you know, as far as regular season starts goes for RCR. That's his 61st career win. That breaks the tie with Kevin Harvick, who currently sits at 60. And then that's his fifth at Fontana. All right, there's a lot of talk, my friend. Kyle Busch, look, he's been strong all year long. I know we're only technically two races in, three if you count the Clash. But the Clash, he was a contender to win. Daytona, of course, he was a contender to win. And if it goes the scheduled distance, he is the winner. And now he does win at Auto Club. Are we officially on the kind of Kyle Busch is back train if he ever, quote unquote, left?
Yeah, I think we are. And you know, people in, and I'm guilty of it too, for, you know, having sort of bearish opinions on Kyle Busch going to RCR. It certainly was a downgrade for him in terms of as that team as a whole, comparing it to Joe Gibbs, that it's a 9-day difference. It's not even the same level. You know, but you know, the Mike Joy put out on the broadcast that, you know, this car, the team that he's with, won 3 races last year with Tyler Reddick. This is Kyle Busch we're talking about, 2-time Cup Series champion, now 61 wins in the Cup Series, which puts him 9th all time. I wouldn't be surprised if Kyle Busch gets 3 or 4 more wins before 2023 is all said and done. I certainly think, you know, after Vegas and Phoenix, we'll get a good idea of where Kyle Busch is at. But right now, I think he's championship material thus far. Because, I mean, like you said, he was in contention. He could be the Clash winner, the 500 winner, and the Auto Club winner. And that would have been an amazing start for Kyle Busch. So, yeah, I think Kyle Busch is here to stay. I mean, and the stat proved that he's now 19 seasons with a win. And that broke the tie he had with Richard Petty. He now holds that record. He's above everybody else in terms of history makers in the sport. Certainly a first valued Hall of Famer. But the Kyle Busch No Blanks Given Tour is certainly off to a really good start.
Look, even the biggest Kyle Busch detractors themselves had to agree that, yes, the No Blanks Given Tour is off to a rousing start, a rowdy start, if you will. I'll be here all week. I don't know. If you watch any incarnation of this show, my thoughts and feelings on Kyle Busch are pretty well known. So I'm gonna keep it professional, but I also want to just say this. Let's not become prisoners in the moment. I'm not saying he isn't back if he ever left, because I mean, he still won last year, even though it was a backdoor win at the dirt race, win to win. But let's also not become prisoners in the moment. I mean, sometimes guys start out real well and then it trails off. I'm not taking away from the start, because I know someone's going, well, you just don't like it. That has nothing to do with it. I'm just saying it's so easy to get caught up in the moment, because I think right now Kyle Busch is like post Jeff Gordon 2001. Jeff Gordon had an incredible career, but he already had 58 of his 93 wins after 2001. He was never quite the same after the final championship. Did he have great years? Absolutely. Even his final full-time season was a great year, but he was never quite the same. He was not the dominant rainbow warrior we had become to know as he was battling out with Dale Sr. Now, that may very well be almost thanks in full to a guy named Jimmy Johnson, but nonetheless, he was never quite the same after he won that 4th championship. Now, obviously, there were change in system and the whole nine, and, you know, how many would he have if they stayed in the Winston Cup era, but I'm just, you know, let's call a spade a spade. So I think for Kyle Busch, I think he's got plenty of good years left, but I think his best days are behind him, and I still stand by that. I think he'll win probably another time or two this season, but the dominant case is I think the dominance is over. Like I said, I think it's kind of post Jeff Gordon 2001. That's just my thought. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he makes me eat crow all season long and for years to come. We'll talk more about Kyle Busch as we get to happy hour headlines. What'd you think in totality of the final cup race on that 2-mile configuration?
You know, like the races before it, the 5 races before it, not including the COVID years, which we didn't go to, the Fontana racetrack has gotten more racier, and it's been getting better every single time the Cup Series has gone to it. For the first, you know, 2 stages of the race, you know, it was really the Ross Chastain show. I mean, he really dominated that race, and so was Dino Suarez. He was up there too. The Trackhouse guys really just, they nailed it right out of the box. And, you know, with no practice, they they really certainly won that part of the race. But all it took was Kyle Busch maybe two or three adjustments coming from stage two to stage three, and he was the fastest car on the track. Certainly Chase Elliott was catching him as the race got later and later. But it just wasn't enough time for Chase Elliott to do anything. And Kyle Busch really just was the man on Sunday. He did overcome that pit road speeding penalty, which I kind of thought would take him out of contention because, you know, Kyle Busch was running up front most of the day. And then once he gets back in traffic, how the car perform, you know, you can't really adjust the next gen car, especially on pit road. So for him to do what he needed to do to get the first win on a track that, you know, takes everybody, takes the crew chief being on it, takes Kyle Busch being on it, you know, takes the whole team. If we're just judging based on what we saw as a team performance, I think that eight team is going to be feared for throughout the entire season. But like we saw last year with 18 winners in the Cup Series, you know, Kyle Busch has a lot of competition to battle through until the playoffs start. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. But this race, I mean, Gluck nailed it. It was a 90%. It was a solid race. And, you know, it's probably one that will be watched on replay years down the road.
Well, no doubt about it. A very historic race for a multitude of reasons. Before we move on, though, I have to ask you, what did you think of that big pile up on the restart? The new restart rule kind of wreaked havoc. What did you think of it? I got to get your thoughts on that.
Thought I was playing iRacing for a moment because that's what I thought. That's what I thought about. Because I mean, I've been on that situation on iRacing as well. But I think that's not the first time we're going to see that this year. We're going to see it multiple times because each racetrack is a different size, and you know, especially when we go to a place like Martinsville and Bristol, you know, guys like to play games in the restart zones coming off of caution. So, you know, we could see this again. But you know, NASCAR could look at the rule, you know, they basically increased it 50%. They could shorten it down to 25% if this becomes an issue more and more down the road. But, you know, I think it was just a product of, you know, trying to game the system, and that's what happened.
Yeah, look, the old saying is, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, essentially. And in NASCAR, let's be honest, that's pretty true. I mean, there's a reason that NASCAR has all the rules and regulations now, because for decades, people took every possible advantage they could. And I'm not knocking anybody for that. It's just the reality of it. So every time there is a rule, you know, rules are like bolts. They're made to be broken, essentially. I don't think this is the last time we see it either. I don't think it's a good look for the sport, though, as a television product. If you can't cleanly pull off a restart, for diehards like us, Colin, and for the rest of the crew here at Racing Refresh Happy Hour, you know, we kind of get it. We kind of understand that gamesmanship, that kind of, well, I just went south. But to the average watcher on TV that isn't in tune with every rule change, because let's be honest, there's a gaggle of them, it looks embarrassing to me to we can't pull off a restart and these are the quote-unquote best drivers in the world, and this is a clean track with no rain. It just doesn't look good. I fear the fact that we're going to see this more often, because to a casual watcher who is not living and dying with every lap or every Bob Pockrass tweet, I think it's an embarrassing look on the sport. Any thoughts on that? My opinion.
You know, I wouldn't say it's an embarrassment. A black eye is also an embarrassment too. But I mean, these are, arguably, out of all three, you know, motorsports that we cover, I think you are right. The NASCAR drivers are the best in the world because of the multiple track conditions they go on entire season. But I mean, we've seen this happen before, wrecks on restarts. I mean, remember the Clash, the final restart on the Clash, before that went green, they all wrecked coming to the line pretty much and took out about 12 cars in it. This isn't the first time we've seen it. It's just the most recent incident of this, of what happened at Fontana on Sunday. What's more embarrassing for the sport happened at Fontana a couple of years ago when no one took the green flag in round three of qualifying. That's more embarrassing when you have the best drivers in the world gamed the system so much that no one takes time in qualifying. That's more hurtful on the sport than a restart.
I can't disagree with you there. Anywho, we'll have to move it along. For what it's worth, the rule is only in place until Atlanta to see how it goes. So we'll get an update on that as the year goes on to see if we keep that rule, change that rule, or do away with it in totality. All right, now it's time for our Cue It Up When We Peggy, our happy hour headlines. Neon. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Ain't nothing like a good neon light. All right, so we talked some about him earlier. Kyle Busch beat Richard Petty's record. He now stands alone with 19 winning seasons in a row. The next closest is Joey Logano, currently coming into 2023 with 11. So he beats the King's record. We talked about, is he back? But here's a great question for this. Number one, what do you think of him passing officially Richard Petty's record of 18 consecutive seasons with a win? And then how far do you think he goes up this wins list? Does he catch Dale Sr.? There's a lot to unpack there, so roll with it.
So I think the easiest mountain to climb for Kyle Busch is the consecutive winning seasons, especially with him being sort of rejuvenated at RCR. This is, I think, I don't know how long that deal is, but let's say it's 2 or 3 years. And then, you know, Kyle Busch isn't even in his 40s yet. He's still in the prime of his career. It's just trending down, not up. I still think he has a couple more winning seasons, at least three, in my opinion. Kyle Busch will just add to his talented resume for the next 3 years. But does he catch Earnhardt Sr.? I don't think so. I think catching Earnhardt would have to be, you know, Kyle Busch 2015 seasons, where he just goes on these runs of like 5-6 wins a year for the next couple of years. And with the amount of talent and competition in the Cup Series, with everything being so even, you know, look at the Fontana race. Anyone in that top 20 could have won it, just if the strategy played out right or if they made an adjustment. 15 wins doesn't seem like a huge number, right? I mean, that's 5 wins a year for the next 3 years, and he gets it. But with how things are going in the sport, I think he comes just short of it. I think he'll get like 71 wins. He'll be 4 away.
I don't disagree with you. I think in, you know, when you look at it kind of black and white, could he get it? Absolutely. But then you look at the fact that now these cars have more parity than ever. They might even continue to make rules to kind of keep that, because that's what NASCAR wants right now, is a bunch of parity. Number two, not age-wise, he turns 38 in May, but okay, as a driver, that many years, he's getting a little long in the tooth. And priorities are a little different. How many more years does he keep competing? I'd say no less than 5, but after that, I think it becomes a question mark. I mean, how long does he keep competing? How often does he win? Because, on a 36 week schedule, as far as regular season goes, or regular points races go, I should say, getting one isn't out of the question, but those kind of runs, again, for a guy that's until this year was no doubt trending downward. So yeah, I just don't know. Given that the parity that we have in NASCAR right now, and I think that's only going to continue, and given that drivers are different these days in terms of how long do you want to drive, lifers, like Richard Petty or Mark Martin, Jeff Gordon kind of started the trend. We were all kind of stunned when he kind of out of nowhere announced his retirement from full-time driving right before the 500 that year. I can't remember. I think it was 2015, 16. Can't recall. He announced his retirement right before the 500. And if I recall, at least for me as a Jeff Gordon fan at the time, it came out of nowhere for me. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of rumblings or anything like that. And he's kind of set that trend, because we've seen Tony Stewart step away. Of course, Dale Jr. step away. And I know Dale Jr. because of concussions, and Martin Truex has, waffled on retirement. Eric Almirola waffled on retirement. Kevin Harvick in his last year guys don't drive as long as it felt like they used to even just 10, 20 years ago. So I wonder about that as well, because priorities are shifting. And so it depends on the work-life balance. But let's bring in our show creator. I want to get his thoughts here. He's a numbers guy. Let's bring in our show creator, Adam Carabine. He probably wasn't expecting to come on for this, but I want to get his thoughts. What do you think of Kyle Busch passing Richard Petty in the consecutive wins mark, consecutive seasons with a win, I should say, 19 versus 18? And then do you think he gets that Dale Sr. number?
I think first of all, the 19 seasons, with at least one win in a row, that's just super impressive, really. Like if you consider 19 seasons ago, you had Jimmy Johnson and all these, big stars back then, Jeff Gordon as well. And he's kind of ridden through a period of like lots of big stars, and yet he still kind of manages to be consistently winning all the time. He's got the best races per win out of anyone in the Cup Series right now. I don't have that number handy right now, but basically it's something close to like 10, every 10 races he has at least a win in his career, which is pretty crazy. As far as him catching up to Dale Sr., I think he does it, I don't know if anyone used to listen to a podcast called Positive Regression, but it was with someone named David Smith, who now I believe works for RFK Racing, but he was a big numbers guy. I used to love listening to that. They found that the statistical best age for a NASCAR driver was 39. That was when they had their best year. So he could actually be just entering his prime. I know it seems weird to think that, and maybe things are trending younger as he as time goes on, because we do have much younger drivers in the Cup Series right now. But I don't know. That's I think he can do it. I think if he has the appetite to stay in the Cup Series long enough, I think he'll catch 76 wins. And also, side note, this win by Kyle Busch makes the Busch brothers the winningest brothers in NASCAR history. So there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, the outlaw Kurt Busch has had his own historic Hall of Fame career that we hope to see continue in some fashion, as he's not used that infamous R word yet. Hopefully he's able to have that a run or two with that 67 third car for 2311. All right. So Colin, we're going to send Adam away, and we're going to keep moving through these headlines. But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to see how far Kyle Busch is going to go. How high does he go up the ranks? And let's be honest, how much does he push the door in on the quote unquote GOAT conversation? There's a good five or six guys that are in that GOAT conversation. It's going to be interesting to see just how far up the list he goes and just how much of a case you can make for him. There is, we all have our opinions on who the GOAT is, but it's a fun conversation to have between about five or six guys. All right, let's keep moving in along. So that was Kevin Harvick yesterday. Kevin Harvick, that was his 750th consecutive race. He'll be marking down some milestones as we move through what is his final, his final full-time season. I say that because not because I know anything, but it's just weird how drivers tend to have one or two more after they're quote-unquote done. So I say final full-time season. Thoughts on 750 consecutive starts for Kevin Harvick, Mr. Colin Best?
I was thinking about Kevin Harvick's career as he entered the sport in a time that was the darkest moment. He is probably the last driver who ever has spoken for Earnhardt on a regular basis, spoken with Dale Sr. on a regular basis. And with him, he was sort of the old guard, the last of the old guard who are now in the Cup Series. After that, it would be Kyle Busch who came around in 05. And then Denny Hamlin, who also came in around the same time. So for him having 750 starts at Fontana, he had great moments. Jimmy Johnson, Harvick in 2011, where the closer moniker really kind of appeared. That was the 2011 year where it kind of stuck for him. And then, you know, last year he won two races at Michigan and at Richmond. The Richmond fall race, excuse me. And Stat Chat Adam, gave his 792nd career start in the Cup Series. So, the show chat just keeps throwing me off. But, you know, what a storied career it is. I don't think it's going to be in the Kevin Harvick after this year. I think he sticks around. But, you know, he'll be in the Fox booth for the first half of the season. So there's no telling what he's going to do.
Well, he could always, I'm sure, have tons of suitors for a one-off ride at Phoenix if that stays the championship race. God knows he's dominant there. And at the old Atlanta, he owned that joint too. Good for him. Yeah, 750, 792 overall. Going back to that Dale Sr. comment before we move on, just for what it's worth, if Kurt Busch races this year, he also, of course, he got the finger from Dale Sr. on that infamous day in 2001. You can go to YouTube and find the clip. Kurt Busch is probably the last guy to get the finger, the old one finger salute from Dale Sr. because that infamous day in 2001, I forget what Kurt Busch did to get the Intimidator going, but he got the old "you're number one" in his book. So if Kurt Busch does in fact race again, he's still on that list. Fun fact about Harvick, he's top 10 all time in DNF percentage. He's got a DNF rate of only 5.81%. That's insane when you consider, I mean, it's his 23rd full-time season. I mean, just incredible. What a career. I wrote a, you know, if I wrote a fine article, if I do say so myself, on racingrefresh.com, where I talk about the fact that I think Kevin Harvick should be mentioned in the same breath as some of the greats. Much of it is a comparison between Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick. Kyle Busch is kind of considered the GOAT of this generation and the one kind of going for the GOAT label overall. I compare those a whole lot. You know, I even talk some about comparing his numbers to the King Richard Petty. Check that out at racingrefresh.com. I'm pretty proud of it. I think it's a fascinating piece. I hope you do as well. All right, let's keep moving along. Some news today. Kyle Larson looks like he's going to run the Indy 500 back-to-back in 24 and 25, according to the AP's Jenna Fryer. Colin, you are our senior open wheel rider, so I don't even need to give my opinion on this. Look, I know how good it is for the sport, but I want you to tell me, what do you think of this news?
You know, it was the worst kept secret of IndyCar NASCAR news that was ever been in quite some time. We knew Larson was going to try to attempt the 500, just with who, because he did have talks late last year. They did fall through for 2023. Now he has a 2-year deal for 2024 and 25 with McLaren. So McLaren right now, they have three full-time drivers. So obviously they would do a fourth entry. So it'd be McLaren with Rick Hendrick as the sponsor. So HendrickCars.com. And he'd be the fifth driver to ever attempt the Indy Coca-Cola double. Which, you know, is an impressive feat. You know, only four other people. Tony Stewart has done it a couple times, and Kurt Busch has also done it. And Kurt Busch finished 11th in the 500 that year, and he DNF'd the Coke 600 that same year. So certainly it'll give a lot of buzz around the 500 time, as if it needs any more buzz. That's just a spectacle in of itself. But, you know, this is the first time, you know, Kurt Busch had a shot, and, you know, he was a favorite to win it. But Larson, you know, would raise more eyebrows because he actually has, I think, that generational talent, sort of like an AJ Foyt, where he can just get in anything and then he could possibly win the 500. He'd be a favorite to win. It all depends on how the month of May goes for him, but, you know, with the 500, anyone can win that race. You know, it's been proven fact in history. So if anyone can do the pull off a double, who get victories in both the 500 and 600, it'd be Kyle Larson for me.
I know another man that is, he won't do it this year. He said that won't work out due to his Le Mans commitment, but Jimmy Johnson, Legacy Motor Club, part-time driver and owner, said that he wants to maybe attempt the double in future years. Again, he wanted to do it this year, but due to the Garage 56 entry with Le Mans, it didn't pan out. So it'd be interesting to see if that also ends up happening sometime down the line. We shall see. All right, we're gonna step aside here for just a moment and bring in our main man, Adam Carbine, because look, with Adam Carbine, as you always know, there are no stupid questions. Adam, what do you got for us this week?
Well, here we go. Look, we got the graphic. Very exciting. We're back at it for another week of no stupid questions. We didn't have this segment last week. You mentioned it earlier. I was away watching the Daytona 500 over on Vancouver Island with some friends. If you saw me last week or saw the episode last week, you would have seen my update from Port Alberni, British Columbia, in place of this segment. But today, we're back with no stupid questions, and we're going to talk about the free pass and or lucky dog rule in NASCAR. Embarrassingly for myself, when I first became a fan of this sport, I did not understand that those two were the same thing, and I also did not know what it was. So I've had a question about that myself this week, and I thought, yeah, we'll look into it. So first, we'll look at what it even is. When a caution comes out, whoever is the closest lapped driver to the front of the field, they get to gain back one of their laps that they are down. It doesn't matter how many laps down you are, as long as you're the closest one to the lead lap cars. There is one situation where you're not allowed to get your lap back, that you can't be the driver that brought out the caution in the first place. But that's essentially what the free pass is. It's also sometimes called the lucky dog. We'll get into that. Why does this rule exist, though? What is this for? It's something you might hear me say a lot. Safety. Safety is actually the reason for the lucky dog rule. Before this rule existed, the rule was that when there's a caution, you would race back to the start-finish line. It was common back then for some of the leaders to purposely slow down a little bit and allow some of the lapped cars to get back on the lead lap. It was kind of an unspoken gentleman's agreement. I don't really know why they would have had this. Like, I feel like nowadays it's like so cutthroat, you almost want to make sure you get your competitors stuck a lap down, but I guess that was the old way. Side note, famously, this gentleman's agreement was once broken by Robbie Gordon at Sonoma in 2003, before my time as a NASCAR fan, but I did some research. He passed Kevin Harvick racing back to the start finish line after a caution had been called, and actually went on to eventually win the race. And like many other drivers called him out, Harvick called it a chicken move, which I'm not sure if that has been censored, but yeah, it was a chicken move apparently. Regardless, the reason that it was changed from that old system was that after a race where Casey Mears nearly hit a stalled Dale Jarrett while racing back to the line, NASCAR realized this is not a safe way to do this. So in a nod to that kind of gentleman's agreement, NASCAR implemented the free pass rule midway through 2003. Now the term lucky dog was actually coined by Benny Parsons during a TV broadcast that same year, and the rest is history. So we still, we call it the free pass nowadays. They do occasionally call it the lucky dog, but I think Mike Joy started free pass. So there you go. That's the lucky dog for you. Don't forget to hit me up on Twitter, ask your questions. I'd be happy to answer them here on the show. And as I always say at the end of this, you know, remember, there are no stupid questions.
Yes. Yeah, submit your questions at Racing Refresh on Twitter. Follow Adam Carbine there anyway for great content throughout the week. You usually live tweet all the races.
I try to, yeah.
How do you even pull that off? That's got to be so tough. Let's have this question. Let's have this conversation right now. How do you pull off live tweeting a race? I can't do it.
I'm not that great at it, let's be honest. But I have the radios playing. I've got I kind of cycle through different drivers, and then I also have the officials. And because the TV broadcast is about 7 or 8 seconds behind the officials, I can hear on the officials' radio that there's a caution, And then I know I can tweet about it within the next 7 seconds and it'll sometimes line up with the TV. I try not to get too crazy about it, but I like doing it. So feel free to follow me there if you need some entertainment or if you're bored during a race. I don't know. I try to keep it light. So
absolutely. Light is a feather. Light like your diet. Adam's on this awful diet. Anywho, Adam, we thank you. We'll see you in just a little bit here. What is that? Some good high quality H2O. Mm-hmm. So we'll see you in just a little bit here. I hope everybody enjoyed that Waterboy reference. And if you don't get that, man, I'm getting old. That's if you don't understand that. So, all right. Well, you know what time it is already? It's time for a little weekend preview, a little race preview action. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a timely looking graphic with you know, the new Super Mario Brothers movie coming out. Hold on. It's a timely looking graphic. All right. So, Mr. Colin Best, I gotta give you the floor and let you dance all over it, because IndyCar starts up at St. Petersburg. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so after a very long off season, since September, we have not seen an IndyCar on any track at all. The IndyCar series is finally back for the opening round of 17 races in 2023. The first race is always at the beautiful Grand Prix of St. Petersburg through the streets of St. Petersburg, Florida. You can catch that live on NBC this Sunday. You have options. You can either watch the race at Las Vegas or you can either watch the race at St. Petersburg. They go head to head with each other. You know, this race last year was dominated by Scott McLaughlin, the Aussie, who was in a sophomore season with Team Penske. A lot of driver changes, most notably Jimmy Johnson has stepped away from his full-time ride at Chip Ganassi Racing. He will not return, and Chip Ganassi did not field anyone to replace him in his seat for 2023. But not a lot of driver changes. This isn't a very stacked rookie field, as you can catch the race preview this Friday on racingrefresh.com, where I'll have more thoughts about that. But what IndyCar... this is a season for them, which, in my professional opinion, is one of those make or break seasons for them. There's been a lot of changes over the offseason in terms of how money is structured. There's no more double points races. The Indianapolis 500 will not be a double points race this year, which will certainly kind of shake things up from the how it was in the past, where, you know, Marcus Ericsson, by winning the 500, kept him in championship contention all the way until three races to go last year, when he shouldn't have even sniffed the top three in standings because he was running so poorly. But, you know, it's weird with IndyCar. There's no new manufacturer changes. There's no new technical regulations. There's no new really anything. It's still a spec series that's still kind of stuck in 2018. I don't want to bash IndyCar, but there's not a lot of new things. That rookie class isn't impressive to me. You know, Alex Palou is still in his contract dispute. We'll find out how that evolves over the next, really until September. But, you know, you're going to have some heavy hitters: Colton Herta, Alex Palou, Scott McLaughlin, Will Power, who's the defending champion from last year. He just won his fifth championship for in the NTT IndyCar series. So, you know, this is the first road and street course of the year. It's always one of the best races of the year, in my opinion. I'm not saying that just because I'm a Florida guy. I'm just saying that because it's a really fun racetrack to be at and see. But, you know, for more of my thoughts, you'll have to catch the Friday pre-race article to catch you up to speed for everything you need to know for the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg weekend. But I'm going to throw a winner out for you real quick. I'm going to go Scott McLaughlin. He goes back to back at St. Pete for 2 years in a row.
Well, look, I don't even need a segue. You already answered my question. I was wondering if you were going to be gracious enough to throw out a winner for us, or if you were going to save that for your lovely article at racingrefresh.com, that you'd be able to catch this Friday, I believe you said. So there, we just made that happen. Two more days. You got 48 hours. Get it done. Let's come on, D-U-N. Let's go. but
already finished.
All right. So you're just waiting on the right time to hit publish. That's a beautiful feeling, by the way. Anywho, not only your time has come, young man. Not only are we talking about the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg in F1, they're starting up in Bahrain. All right, one thing I have to ask you about: anytime there's a fellow Logan in the field, I got to talk about it. Logan Sargeant is the first American driver since 2015. What's your expectations for him, and of course Bahrain as a whole? Talk to me.
Well, he is driving for Williams, and if anyone's been keeping up, even a casual F1 fan will know that, you know, driving for Williams isn't really the best seat in any F1 car. But Logan Sargeant has the talent. He has a couple wins last year, F2 most notably. He won a doubleheader in Austria. He won the sprint and the feature in Austria and sort of put him on the map in terms of that IndyCar F1 success that put him in the seat at Williams. You know, we just had F1 spring testing. We had 2 days of F1 spring testing in Bahrain. You know, there's a couple notable things. You know, Max Verstappen enters as the defending world champion. Red Bull also enters as the defending constructors champion for F1. Coming from the reports that I've seen, they increased their power unit by about 15%, and knowing how difficult it was to bring down Team Red Bull last year, if they even just have a 15% better power unit in their car, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Mercedes has caught up, but their Lewis Hamilton says they're just quite not there to compete with the Red Bulls. And then you have Ferrari, who say they're happy. They have a new strategist or new manager for the Red Air. I keep calling them the Red Arrows, but they go by another name. I can't. The horses, the stallions over in Italy. They're very happy with their car, but they have reliability issues, like all Ferrari engines did last year. So we'll hope to see if they fix those. And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Lance Stroll, who's the Canadian in the field. From all reports, he's just complacent right now with his team. He's on a team that can fight for wins on a week in, week out basis. He might fight for points finishes, but that's really about it. You know, last year for Bahrain, Charles Leclerc hit the Grand Slam. He won the pole. He led the most laps, and he won the race. But really, no one knew what Ferrari brought to the table, and the only reason Ferrari won that race is because both Red Bulls on lap 56 and 57, so three to go and two to go, both retired from the race, which handed Charles Leclerc and the Ferrari team a win. But I don't think that's going to happen this year. I'm going to think Max Verstappen pulls off the win in Bahrain.
All right, he's got Max Verstappen getting it done in F1. So, let's keep on moving and grooving as we continue our race preview. All right, that lovely thing we call a NASCAR, our favorite stock car / spec series. They're in Las Vegas, the Pennzoil 400 happening this weekend. Of course, you can't think Pennzoil without Joey Logano and his as he admitted, his two-faced self. Of course, when you look at all time in Las Vegas, most wins, Jimmy Johnson, most laps led, Kevin Harvick. So most laps completed, again, Jimmy Johnson. But again, in recent years, when you think Vegas, you think Logano, you might think Brad Kay, especially in the Penske days. What are you going to have your eye on? We're not doing any picks right at the moment. We are very shortly, but what do you got your eye on in totality for Vegas?
So this is the first mile and a half race of the year. And, you know, my things are, can Kyle Busch keep up his momentum? Can the Hendrick boys, even though Chase finished P2, usually around this time of year, we find out the real strength of the Hendrick team. Where did they stand at this point? Because they have been very strong over the past couple of years, both of the series champions from 2020 and 2021 come from Hendrick Motorsports. So in my mind, Chevrolet as a whole right now is in good standing with everything. They've won the Daytona 500. They worked well at the 500. They were all in the top five at Fontana. So now we're going to Las Vegas. You know, it has character too. It's a bumpy, it's a worn out surface. But what I'm keeping my eye on are the Toyota teams who haven't made as much noise as we thought they would have at this point in the season, Grace 3, but they sort of had a disappointing Daytona 500. Outside of Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex Jr., they were basically a non-factor at Fontana. Can the Toyota stride in week three of car season? That's going to be some of my big storylines to watch out for.
And I know that we're only on week three here, the regular season, but let's not forget, this is an important race for later on down the road. Vegas is the first race in that round of 12. You know, that's so the notes are valuable. If you are, if you're thinking about trying to win a championship this year, this is an extremely valuable track. This is an extremely valuable race because, you know, it'll be playoff time before we know it, people. I know that's a lot to think about right now, but it's always coming. So again, you can't overstate how valuable this first race is because we'll do it again here in the fall with the round of 12. So you know it's an important race for everybody in the garage. All right, so you know we as we near closer to the end of our show, it's time for a little racing refresh picks. Hit it with me. Come on now. Oh yeah, look at that. Eye of the storm. That fits. You know, on Monday we had some wild weather here in Ohio. So that whole storm thing fits. All right, so. I want everybody to come on in here. Let's bring in the show creator. Let's bring in my better half. I want everybody to come on in. Come on in. Gather around the campfire. Gather around old Uncle Logie's learning tree. Let's talk about it. All right. Don't smile so hard, Adam. Don't smile so hard. Adam, update us on the pick situation. Try not to be so jabroni-ish about it.
Well, last week we had our racing refresh picks, and happily for me, I'm happy to report that I won the week picking Kevin Harvick. He finished fifth. So, yeah, there you go. Look at this. Peggy and I taking the lead here. Coming in last place out of the four of us, meaning they get to pick first for Vegas. That would be our good friend, Mr. Loganity Logan. Who you got for Vegas?
Well, first of all, I want to say I resent your tone because there was so much joy in that. It was ridiculous. Jeez. Vegas, I'll go with the defending winner. Why not old front row Bowman the Showman, Alex Bowman? Why not?
All right. Our second pick goes to the third place finisher from last week. That's Colin. What do you got?
I thought my pick was amazing, and Logan thought it was too, because I picked that Jones boy. And now I can't pick him again, which, I don't know, could be a blessing or could be a curse. Who knows? I know there's one driver I'm not going to pick, and that's Ryan Blaney, a black cat. And I don't know if you know anything about bad juju, but I think that's pretty bad. Like, crossing a black cat's one thing. Cat as well, that's not a good thing as well. But I'm going to pick Joey Logano.
That's a good pick. Pick.
And all the Pennzoil executives said, yay!
All of you took money.
Joey Logano's got the best... Joey Logano's got the best average finish of all current drivers right there at Las Vegas. So not a bad pick. Peyton, you are up next. producer Peggy.
I'm gonna take Noah Gregson.
Oh wow, that's a good pick. I was gonna take Gregson. I can't believe it. You've stolen him. I was gonna take him. Oh shoot. Okay. You know what? I'm gonna ride the hot hand here, and I'm gonna take Kyle Busch.
Pulling triple duty, you sure?
Yeah, he's good. He knows what he's doing. He's coming off a win. He's feeling confident, and you know, he's ready to shove it in Joe Gibbs Racing's face. So
it's really nice to see who cares about me on this show. It's really nice.
That was a good pick you had last week, Logan, with Larson, was it? I think, didn't he finish like 16 or 17 laps down?
Well, I picked Larson. I didn't pick his crew. I didn't pick the engineer. I didn't pick the engine builder. I picked Larson. All right. You give him the right kind of car and he'd have made some noise.
Well, and now you can't pick Larson again for the rest of the season. Hey, so
I'll give you guys a little Larson. I don't know if you know this, but if you look on the NASCAR.com, they have they have lap time, timing, and scoring. Most of the time throughout the entire event, if long lead lap, he actually had the pace to probably beat Kyle Busch and win. So Logan, even though he had some bad luck, if he didn't have any bad luck, he probably would have been a winner.
Look, every day I wake up, there's a win everywhere. It just comes to me. It's the way it is. Look, we can't be stopped over here. Loganity can't be stopped. It can only be contained. All right, but one thing we do have to stop is all this fun, because unfortunately we're coming to the end of another lovely episode of Racing Refresh Happy Hour. And so you know what that means, folks? It's time for a little closing time. That's right. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here at this particular link on the interwebs. So, with that, look, Adam, you're feeling real froggy today. Any final words?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm always looking forward to NASCAR being back. It's exciting. It's good. But I'm actually going to try and check out the Formula One race this week as well. Although I'm going to have to get up super early, I think I'm going to give it a try. So we'll look forward to that next week. Also, I wanted to point out that, Colin, you're correct. Kyle Busch had the most fast laps as scored by NASCAR, but tied for second was Kyle Larson and Ross Chastain at Auto Club, even though he was laps behind. So there you go. Good shout there, Colin. I'll give you that.
So was I really wrong? You decide, folks. All right.
Yes.
You decide. Yeah. All right. Colin, final words, sir, as we wrap up another lovely edition of this here happy hour.
So with car and F1 being back, I'm sure happy. But I'm not happy about losing my Sunday morning sleep-ins, because for me, at 9:04 a.m. Central Time in Bahrain. For Adam, I don't know what that's going to be. I don't know how many hours behind you are, but that means you're probably like 5 a.m. start for you, which that sucks. That's a 7 a.m. start. Oh, my God, that sucks so much. But, hey. My rant is just a little closing thing. IndyCar, I don't know why you do this to me. Why do you have the season opening race and then take a month off and then take half a month off and go to race three? It's like, what are you trying to do to your fans? You didn't even do preseason testing. You didn't even televise it. The rich people could watch it, but the normal folk, me, I had to look on Twitter to find pictures and timing and scoring, and it wasn't right. IndyCar, do better. And just because you redo the bathrooms at Indianapolis Motor Speedway doesn't mean I'm just saying. That's what Roger thinks, but that's not what
Well, I called out ESPN last week. I called out ESPN last week for their headline with Jimmy Johnson, Richard Petty, and you call out IndyCar this week. So we're making ourselves some headway here. Racing Refresh, the little guy with the short man syndrome. That's us. So Miss Peggy, Miss Peter, my better half, the wind beneath my very average wings. Any final words?
I just want to say rest in peace to Otto Coquette, and I hope that he didn't bring any bad luck to Ryan Blaney.
Yes, we should all pour one out for Auto Club Cat. And with that, this has been a lovely another edition of Racing Refresh Happy Hour. Most importantly, we want to thank you for taking the time to watch, listen, and hopefully enjoy this lovely podcast / show we do every week right here. And so, until then, we'll see you at the next track. Be well, smile. What's that thing the founder used to say? It's all about being kind to yourself, be kind to others. We'll see you at the next track. I'm out of here.